Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, DMV Hoops fans? What is up, Wizards fans? I think this is going to be kind of a hybrid combo DMV Hoops Believe in Wizards episode because we're talking about DMV draft prospects, but also this applies to the Wizards, I think, as somebody that the front office, you know, has all these second round picks and they need to hit on some of these lesser heralded guys. So we've got local prospects for them to look at and then you kind of take some note of. And to join me to go through this today, I have Nick Kalinowski, aka Cali Drafts. If you follow him on Twitter, if you don't, you should. It's a great follow. For all things NBA draft, especially. So Nick, thanks for joining me, man.
Of course. Yeah. You were one of the first podcasters to actually have me on back when I had way less of a following. So really appreciate you having me on back then and then inviting me back for this. This is a really fun topic. I know it's been in the works for a while and I've been excited for it.
Yeah. Thanks for doing it. I said this to you beforehand, but for everybody listening, there was nobody I could think of that would be better to do this than Nick because he knows all the deep cut guys and some of these are going to be deep cut guys. So unless you're a draft nerd, you might want to tune out here halfway through the show because some of these guys will probably never see an NBA court, honestly. But we're going to be thorough and comprehensive and at least just kind of give you the names to know and pay attention to. But first, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades. We're also brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, UFC, golf, tennis, college basketball if you want to. You can bet on some of these guys even if you wanted to do that. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. You can get place your wagers, live betting, favorite casino and card games. They're all available from their website or your mobile device if you want to do that. Use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Nick, so I think the team we got to start with here is probably the guy, like the team with the only guy that maybe gets a guy up into the lottery here this year, I think, or in that range at least. And that's your alma mater here, UVA. Virginia's probably biggest name guy for draft circles, I would say, is Ryan Dunn. I don't know, so maybe let's just start there. For anybody who hasn't seen Ryan Dunn, can you just kind of give us kind of the overview of what makes him, you know, an intriguing prospect for NBA teams?
Yeah, so he's a very divisive prospect. I've seen him all over the place in terms of mock drafts. I've seen him up in the top 10. I've seen him in the low first round, even sometimes early in the second round. Mm-hmm. That's because he's almost two different players merged into one based off of what end of the floor you're looking at him on. On defense, he's probably, if not the best defender I've ever evaluated, one of the top three for sure.
Yeah.
And that's because of the way he's able to, like, he has an insane length that a lot of people have, but I've never seen anyone control that length and utilize it as well as he does, disrupting passing lanes, switching on defenders, going up for ridiculous blocks. He had like a 7-block game against Wake Forest. And if you haven't watched the highlights of that, I would just go back and watch all 7 of those blocks because all of them are different.
Like, they're not cheap blocks either. Like he earns them, you know, he's working for it.
They're extremely difficult. There's like chase down blocks. He has some of those. He has some blocks in the post. He has some blocks on threes. He does it all. So on the defensive end, he would immediately slide in and be one of the top two players on any NBA roster on that end. But unfortunately, the NBA game is not all about defense.
It's almost not about defense.
It's mostly shifted toward an offensive centric game. And Ryan Dunn, how do I put this politely, doesn't really have a very strong skill on that offensive end.
It's besides maybe he can hang his hat on or anything.
Yes. Like that. Besides maybe catching lobs. He can do that pretty well.
He's almost like Clint Capella offensively, yeah, you know, exactly. Like he's a small ball 5 on offense, which is tough.
Exactly. His jump shot really has never really developed. Has never progressed ever since he first came to Virginia. He's very reluctant to even take them at this point, which gives an inherent advantage to the defense. You can just leave him out there basically anywhere outside of 10 feet. Mm-hmm. You're playing essentially 5-on-4. And in more recent games, he seems to be even reluctant to get the ball in general.
Yeah.
In the early season, like in the games against Florida in particular, you could see him attack the rim with aggression and fervor. Whereas recently he just kind of like stands there, catches it, doesn't look like he knows what to do, and then just immediately tries to get rid of it to someone.
Seems like the confidence is like totally gone for him.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah. And it's made him almost a complete black hole on that end.
Along those lines, though, real quick, Nick. So I remember when Marcus Smart first got drafted, and he was so reluctant to do anything with the ball offensively, because he was always trying to make the right play. And I feel like that's what Ryan Dunn does most of the time, is like he seems like a guy that's trying to play like good team, unselfish basketball to a fault, where he would actually be helping the team more, even if he took shots that he probably couldn't make, just because it's, you know, it's at least taxing the defense enough that he could hit a few of them. But along those lines, I don't think his jump shot is like broken. Like, this isn't like a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist situation where he's shooting like this sideways knuckleball. Like, it's a little rigid, I think, but I don't know. Where do you think he is projectable as a shooter long term, or is this a total loss cause?
I wouldn't say it's a complete total loss cause, but all the indicators are not good.
Sure.
It's not just his three that's bad. His mid-range is also in the 20% last time I checked, and his free throws are brutal to watch. They're not just like
mid-50s from the free throw line too,
but they're not just like rolling off the rim misses. He has a couple air balls this year. He's hit the backboard a couple times.
He misses wide a lot, which you don't see.
Yeah. When I played basketball, there was always like good misses and bad misses. Good misses are front and back.
Yep.
Bad misses are on the sides, and he's a lot more bad misses than good.
I agree.
So it would definitely be a major revamp there. Yeah.
To me, he's so special defensively. Like, we mentioned that wide range for him. Like, I'm of the like pro, you know, proponent here list. Like, I think he's a guy I would take around the lottery, just because if he's even projectable as a shooter, he becomes like an instant impact kind of guy. And he doesn't have like the creation kind of stuff that Herb Jones does, but he's like bigger. And I actually think some of this is like a little bit of UVA just being a mess on offense too. Like, this, this much better than I do from watching all these games, but they're a tough watch offensively in general. And he would not be the first guy that we see leave, that team and actually look better offensively once they're gone.
I mean, yeah, I'd love to see him in a more free flowing offense. That's for sure. Virginia's offense is very, very stagnant. It's a lot of just swinging the ball around and then letting Reese Beekman iso ball into the paint. But as you said, it's not very exciting to watch. For Dunn, I think if he plays in an offense that gets out in transition, I think he'll thrive a lot.
Yeah, agreed.
Because he's definitely got all the athletic tools that you would ever want from a player. And one thing that I had a discussion with other draft minds about this class is that there are very few guys who have like an elite standout skill in this class. Ryan Dunn is one of them. His defense is unquestionably in the top ilk of any draft prospect in any class.
I think
so. If you're just banking on guys who have elite skills, then yeah, definitely take him in the lottery.
I try not to just like watch highlights of guys. Every once in a while, I'll do it as like a refresher when we're going to do one of these pods and I can't watch like whole games or whatever. But Ryan Dunn is like one of the few guys where if you just search Ryan Dunn defense on YouTube and sit for a few minutes, like watching defensive highlights shouldn't be as entertaining as they are. But like you said, he runs the full gamut here of, you know, he'll like be good on ball, off ball. He'll steal the ball and have a run out. He'll swat you at the rim. Like, he'll weak side shot block. I mean, he's so thorough and good kind of on both sides of that. So I think that's, alone probably makes him the biggest of the names we'll talk about here. And if I were the Wizards and he's somehow available at like 26 still or 25 or whatever they take, like, that's a no-brainer to me. You put him
I agree.
Out on the wing, and you just hope that you can get him with Denny's shooting coach or whatever, and hope that that takes hold.
He may need a little bit of time with the go-go too, but
yeah.
I think if you pick him at 26, there's a lot less pressure on him. I remember we would have discussions about Isaiah Todd, and
it's not worked out well for me.
How that went so far.
Yeah.
But I think the difference between Dunn and Todd is that, to your point, Todd was a very low feel player.
Yeah.
I think Dunn, even though he doesn't convert many shots, knows what he's doing on the basketball court on offense. And I think that gives him a step above our previous projects that we've tried to take in the draft.
Honestly, just the way the Wizards have drafted too, like, I'd rather just take a shot on a guy that's just like gonna hustle and play hard as shit defensively. And worst case scenario, if he just pushes everybody else in practice and makes them kind of up their level on that end too, I think it's definitely worth it. Just in the chat here, Jimmy Go Outside asks, can he be the next Dennis Rodman? I think the comp, you know, realistically, that if you draft him this high, the hopeful comp is like OG Anunoby is like the kind of guy you're hoping he turns into, is like a big 4/3 kind of guy who can, you know, guard 1-4 and maybe even some small ball 5 sort of situations too.
I think what made Rodman special, of course, as everyone knows, is rebounding.
Sure.
And while Dunn is a decent rebounder, he's not the greatest of all time. So I don't think he's going to create those second chance opportunities that Rodman was so good at. But within a team structure, if you have 4 other guys that can stretch the floor, I think, and his immediate role, as you mentioned, hinted at earlier, is probably going to be as like a small ball 4 or 5.
I think so.
So I think he could provide some productive minutes in that role immediately. Which is
even like a Brandon Clark for Memphis that first couple of years, where like he was almost a small ball big, and maybe you can hit enough corner threes just to keep people kind of honest. Something like that, I think, would be.
We're not asking him to be an elite shooter ever,
right? Just mid-30s would be cool.
As you said, just to be respectable.
Yeah,
just make the defense care that you're actually on the court.
So I'm lazy, so I've not updated these stats. We were going to do this earlier in the week here, and then I flicked out on Nick here. So these are from like middle of last week, but he was averaging about 9 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1.5 steals, 2.5 blocks, about low 20s from 3 and mid 50s from the free throw line. So you can really see kind of the big split here. And it's very rare, I think, when a guy is elite like this defensively and a total nothing on offense. It's usually kind of the other way around. Interesting to see this kind of guy. So let's switch over to his teammate here, Reese Beekman. So Reese is like kind of a little bit of both, I think, but not particularly great on either end of the floor, in my opinion. So he's like a 6'3"-ish guard. He's averaging 14 points, 3 rebounds, about 6 assists, 2.5 steals, about 2 turnovers. Low 30s from 3, but I think because of that offense, he gets tasked with taking a lot of like really tough shots, and he's the guy that has to throw up like the daggers at the end of the shot clock, and I think that's definitely hurt the percentage a little bit. When I see Reese Beekman play, I see good college player, but not an NBA player personally. I guess, where are you at on Reese Beekman?
I've had him fringe second round the last 2 years. This class is weaker. I think he's probably still going to be in the 30s to 40s range for me.
Okay.
I'm probably a bit higher on his defense than you are. He came in as basically a almost Ryan Dunn type, an exclusive defensive guy.
Sure.
And I think his offense has progressed to a point where he can be a useful player on an NBA court, because when he first came in, go back and watch his game winner against Syracuse again in the COVID bubble. Mm-hmm. His jump shot is like this.
Yeah. I remember
it's very ugly.
Pretty wonky. Yeah.
Just the progress that he's made over the last 2 or 3 years on that shot is enough for me to signify like, oh, this guy's going to put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's going to dedicate himself to, becoming a positive impact player, however he can, especially on the offensive end. And then I never imagined, even when he came in, that he would be a primary creator for the Virginia offense. And he's definitely turned into that and more. I totally agree with your point about how his percentages look a little low, because I think his usage rate is way higher than it should be.
Yeah, agreed. That's a tough ask for some of the things they need him to do, just because there's nobody else really making anything happen on the court at any time. I mean,
they brought in all these transfers and none of them have worked. And so it's a lot of the time it's Reese Beekman bailout ball, which has mixed results, especially when you have him driving into three people in the paint. But I think his overall finishing arsenal as a result has progressed to a point where it used to be just like your standard guard layup package, but now he has double clutches, his reverses, he fights through contact. He has this nice like little floater push shot that he uses to get over centers that he didn't have before.
He also like banks a weird amount of them in, even from head on, right, which I don't know. I didn't think they were intentional, but it seems like he keeps doing it. So I guess it must be.
I think he can be a useful rotation player for sure. Come in, play some tough defense, hit some open shots, be a relatively good secondary creator. I don't think he's ever going to be a starting quality player, but I think he's going to hang around the fringes for a while.
And this is an interesting one because of the teams we'll probably talk about, they have probably the two most legitimate NBA prospects of any of them, but it's been an overall underwhelming year for Virginia basketball. And it's kind of funny. You would have thought if they had multiple like NBA guys here, like, you know, they would be able to turn this into a kind of a more impressive season than they have, but
Almost reminds me of Pepperdine every year. Pepperdine has
four guys drafted.
Yeah. And they always have the worst record in the WCC. Like, how is that possible?
At least UVA is still playing good defense. Pepperdine has not played defense in the entire time that Lorenzo Romar's been there, either time he's been there, I guess. So let's keep it moving here. Let's go to the other kind of local-ish big-name team that folks listening to may actually pay more attention to, and that's Maryland Terrapins. There was a lot of talk before the year that Deshaun Harris-Smith could come in and be a one-and-done prospect, and that has very much not played out. It's like questionable if he's a Power 5 player after year one. I think he'll get there. He's trending up, but it has not been pretty so far. So just what are your initial thoughts on DHS?
He's definitely a Power 5 player. I would agree with that point. I think he just needs to get more confident and adjust to the college style of play. Mm-hmm. I think he tries to do too much at times and try to be that primary creator and that dominant five-star guy that Maryland fans were looking for when he came in. And his skill level isn't there yet. But I don't think I would completely write him off as a draft prospect. I think he's definitely shown flashes. What was the game that he had, like 20 points, 19 points? Was it Indiana?
Yeah, he's had a couple this year, especially recently, where he's trending sort of like, he'll have like a 17-point, 5-rebound, 4-assist, 2-steal game. And you're like, oh, okay, this is something else. I think, to your point, he is definitely a multi-year project. So the one-and-done thing is definitely out the table. And I think the two-year and done thing is off the table here. He can't shoot on a team full of people that can't shoot, but at least some of the guys, like his other teammate, Jamie Kaiser, there was some speculation that maybe he could turn himself into an NBA player here too, but he's missing shots, but it looks like he can shoot. Watching DHS up close, it's like a slingshot, knuckleball combo, and I just don't see any way his shooting form now is projectable longer term. So I think that's going to be like a real point of emphasis for him development-wise over the summer because, you know, you can't just be bully ball. So if people can sag off you that much, it's really hard for him to kind of get downhill, and I think that's where he's, you know, at his best.
It's the Ryan Dunn issue without the elite defense.
Yeah, exactly.
You're playing 4-on-5 on the offensive end of the floor, and maybe you're not playing 6-on-5 on defense to make up for it.
Right, exactly. No, that's a great way to look at it.
So definitely not a prospect this year. As you said, I'm going to keep him on my watch list for next year just to see how he progresses. Drake should probably go up without Jameer Young being there. But yeah, definitely in the multi-year project category, but big name, local DMV kid, I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been like kind of a brutal year for Maryland fans, myself included here. And as it mentioned in the chat here from It Never Makes No Sense, the fit surrounding DHS at Maryland is atrocious. And I agree. They're the worst shooting Power 5 team I've ever seen. And I hate that I have to watch them as much as I do. Like, they're so good defensively. I think Harris Smith is actually a good team defender for a freshman. Like, he's not the one like getting burned a ton, especially again later in the year here. So I think that's like the angle for him is just be a do-it-all, sometimes wing, sometimes, you know, guard, sometimes forward kind of guy, play multiple positions at the college level and just hope you can turn into like a solid enough shooter to do some of those other things well. And You know, we'll see. So he's averaging about 7 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. Last I checked, he was around 18% from three on about 2.5 attempts. And that's just, it's not going to get it done long term.
No, that's not going to get it done short term either. Yeah,
exactly. That's very true. Let's move on to the guy on their team that I thought would turn into an NBA player, kind of more so than he has, especially early in his career, and that's Julian Reese. There was at least like some talk of, okay, like he's making mid-range jumpers in practice, like he's got good touch around the rim. Maybe this is a guy that can kind of slowly back his way out into a three-point shooter. And now over time, like he's developed this like incredibly weird hitch from the free throw line where he like triple clutches it almost. And it's different from game to game. It almost looks like he has the yips. And that's really just kind of a bummer to see because he's probably, I would say, one of the two most impactful bigs defensively in the Big Ten right now. Like every, you know, defensive metric has him as like, if not the big, you know, one of the two. And I think he's like, you know, active and switchable. He collects way too many cheap fouls, but, you know, a mobile big that could at least kind of cover multiple people and protect the rim a little bit is at least a guy that should be more on draft radars than he probably is right now. And that's because I think the shooting is just so non-existent beyond about like 6 feet.
Yeah, he was a guy who I watched his high school tape and I loved him.
Yeah,
coming out. He was like athletic, mm-hmm. great defender. To your point, great team player. Really stood out on like the circuit tape that I watched mm-hmm. of him. And then to your point, he hasn't really progressed. As a matter of fact, I would argue that he's probably regressed.
Yeah, I think
last year I wouldn't have had him as a guy who declared, mm-hmm. But I'd have had him definitely for sure on my watch list coming into this year as Maryland's top prospect and a guy who could easily sneak into the second round conversations with more progression in his offensive game. And you kind of mentioned it. It's gone backwards. The mid-range has completely disappeared. The three-pointers never come along. Most of his efficiency numbers have dipped.
It's just left-hand jump hooks. Like that's literally the entire bag for him right now. And that's not going to work at the NBA level.
He needs to get back in the lab with Angel, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Have her teach him some things. He's too small, I think, to be a small ball five, too lanky. So his future at the pro level will probably be at the four. Mm. And being a non-shooter at the four in the modern NBA is just not going to work. Okay. And so he's not going to be on an NBA court this year, probably not next year. We'll see how the rest of his development fleshes out.
If you're like a Ryan Dunn type where you're a 4-3, and you're a non-shooter, but at least maybe there's some hope for the future, but you can guard multiple positions, like that's a little easier, I think, to make it than a 4/5, you know, like he's a big four, and I can't see him kind of going the other way and ever becoming more perimeter oriented. And you just don't see anyone kind of like that last in the league, really, of just I'm a four and basically only a four. So I think that's
And you need a pro head coach who's creative enough to scheme around that. And I don't know if there are that many pro coaches who are creative enough to hide that.
I'm not sure that anyone alive is creative enough to hide where he's at right now, unfortunately.
Julian Reese? No. Ryan Dunn? Maybe.
Oh, yeah, Dunn for sure. Yeah. Agreed. So Reese is about 13.5 points, 10 rebounds a game, 1.5 assists, 1.1 steals, 2 blocks. And 57% from the free throw line, 0% from the 3-point line. That's going to be a non-starter for NBA evaluators, unfortunately. All right, let's keep moving here. Probably the last guy worth even talking about on this team is Jameer Young. I don't see a world where he's an NBA player personally, but there are a few more guys kind of in his mold or archetype that are starting to like hang around NBA teams. Like they're not exactly the same, but the Jose Alvarados and the Jacob Gilliards of these kind of undersized guards that are making life tough for people defensively. I think Jameer Young is like really, really good defensively. And he's a guy who can like pester the shit out of you, but he also has to carry such a heavy load offensively because no one else here is capable of doing anything. So I think that kind of hurts the defense a little bit here, but he's really athletic. He's under 6 feet tall, I would say, whatever they list him at. I kind of don't believe he's any bigger than that.
6'1", I think that's what they list him at.
Yeah, like I've been near enough to him that I don't personally buy that, but you know, he's a good enough athlete to kind of make up for a little bit of the height there too. So I don't know. Do you see Jameer Young having any chance of being a guy that could get hot on a summer league team or something and stick around longer term?
So if he's under 6 foot, that gets a lot harder. I think there were at one point last year, there was only one player in the entire league who was under 6 foot. Jacob Gilliard made that too.
Yeah.
But I mostly concur with your scouting report. Amazing defender. Like one of my favorite players to watch on this list that we're going to talk about today, just because of how active he is on both ends of the court. I think he's in the Reese Beekman boat where his percentages are going to go up if he's not having to carry an entire offense on his back. But as long as he can be a pest and keep scoring at a high clip and doing active point guard things, he'll shine in the summer league. That's for sure. And there are a lot of guys of his ilk who do so and then get summer camp invites and then exhibit 10s in the G League. And so they're basically kept on the NBA team's like short list.
Practice squad almost at that point.
The guys who know the system can be called up for a 10-day whenever you need them to. So I think he definitely fits in that category, probably as his median outcome. I think his top floor is like a Jose Alvarado, like a guy who could come off, give you a couple minutes off the defense just to annoy the crap out of Chris.
Pick up 94 feet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't see him getting picked or anything.
Agreed.
Or getting 15 minutes a night on an NBA floor. But he's out of the three that we named, he's easily got the best shot.
Yeah, I think so too. He's a guy to me that could just like cook people in the G League for the next 5 or 6 years, and you just see these like insane, oh, Jameer Young had 31 points for the Capital City Go-Go last night kind of guys. And
exactly.
Players like him are the reason why I've lobbied for like a third round of the NBA draft that's solely picking guys to go to the team's local G League affiliate. And then you just draft like regional rights players, like a Jameer Young goes to the Wizards, like and he plays for the Go-Go. Like if I'm a Maryland fan, I would go watch a Go-Go game just to check out, you know, how Jameer Young ended up essentially.
Yeah. I think you have to increase the value of G League contracts for that. Cause I think
for sure.
A guy like Jameer Young can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
If he goes to like an Australian team or something where the league is more wide open,
yep.
he's going to score a lot of points.
Yeah, so, I totally agree. Yeah, you need it to be
a
solid six-figure number, and with some upside there too. It never makes no sense asking the chat, is Dante Scott a G League player as a small ball five? I don't see it. There was a point early in the year last year where he was hitting like every three he took to start the season, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe there's something to this, but just kind of the back to the basket, I don't know, fifth year senior who's still having like all these like bad defensive lapses and stuff like that. I don't think there's any world where he steps foot on an NBA court personally.
Yeah, there was, we had a conversation before. I'm now a full-time employee. Dante Scott's been at Maryland since I was in high school, he's still not anywhere close to being an NBA player.
Agreed.
So, I mean, could he be a G League guy who gets like 10 minutes a game? Sure. But I think he would make way more money overseas.
I'm in total agreement. Like, I think there are a few guys that I'm like, why is this guy hanging around the G League? And I think it's largely because they just don't want to like leave the area, which.
Yeah. Or they don't want to give up on their like dream. And the G League is technically the closest you're going to get.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's stay kind of right around here and move over to Georgetown. They're probably two biggest or most realistic, or even though I don't know that they're personally all that realistic. The only two potentially viable NBA candidates on their roster here, Jaden Epps and Dontre Styles. Epps is averaging 17 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, about a steal, 3.5 turnovers, 31% from three, 37% from the field, which is tough to pull off. Maybe 38 he's up to, I don't know. And then Styles is 13.5 points, about 6 rebounds, about an assist, about a half a steal, about a half a block. I don't know. Where are you at with either of these guys?
Neither of these guys are full-time prospects to keep an eye on for this year, or probably even next year. Georgetown has to get a much better team around them.
If they're their two best guys plus Supreme Cook, you're gonna struggle the way they struggle.
You're Supreme Cooked.
Yeah. Nice. Well done.
Thank you. But Jaden Epps is another classic, undersized. What is it? He's listed, another guy I think is listed at 6'1".
Another
tough. Undersized volume scorer. This is going to be a common trend between a lot of these guys that we're going to talk about here. But unlike Jameer Young, he's not as efficient. I don't think he's suited to being a primary option at all. He was actually a decent player at Illinois within their team system when he wasn't asked to do so much.
Yeah,
but I think his upside is a high major third or fourth offensive option who's being asked to do way too much at Georgetown.
And yeah, like the volume microwave scorer for a team, you know, and not much else. And now he has to be the whole offense essentially some nights.
Exactly. Yeah. Dontre Styles, he was buried on the North Carolina bench for a while.
Mm.
I think he's a better prospect.
I agree.
Than Epps, but that's kind of bring apples to oranges here. Yeah. He's a little bit longer, a bit better defender, a bit better shooter as well. But I don't see anyone out of that Georgetown team cracking even a G League roster anytime soon.
Yeah, they've got a good recruiting class coming in with Caleb Williams and guys like that from Sewell Friends, and they're going to need a couple of those guys to pop and some big transfer portal additions, I think. Epps had that one huge game in like a secret scrimmage where he apparently scored like 46 of the team, 60 points.
Yes.
Everyone was like, is this the guy? Is he, you know, is he going to go nuts? And unfortunately, a secret scrimmage has been about the highlight of the Georgetown season. So that says a lot.
I think you could also look to like a guy like Pajemski, who was a similar ilk, barely played on Illinois' bench, goes to a team at a where he's the primary option, then goes off, gets drafted the NBA. You'd think Epps would be the next in line, the very similar path. It's just not worked out that way.
Yeah, that's unfortunate for Georgetown fans. So any of you listening to this, we feel bad for you, and hopefully better days are ahead, because probably can't get a whole lot worse. All right, let's move back to the Virginia side of things here. And again, this is DMV hoop. So some of these were really stretching. If you are within the state of Virginia, we're counting you for purposes for the pod here. So Hunter Couture at Virginia Tech, this guy shoots the shit out of it. Like he's a real deal shooter.
Oh, yeah.
I think they list him at 6'4" also. I don't know that
he's not 6'4". Yeah, he's closer to 6'2".
Two would be my guess as well. Yeah. But he's averaging 14 points, about 3 rebounds, about 2 assists, about a steal, 43-ish% from 3 on high volume, and about 90% from the free throw line. So I think he's a guy that, you know, if you need like actual shooting, he can come in and shoot at any level. I just don't see who he could guard at an NBA level, unfortunately. And he's small. He's got to basically be a point guard, and he's definitely not that, in my opinion. So I don't really see a path here.
Yeah. When I think of Hunter Couture, I think of a guy who came out last year, Andrew Funk from Penn State.
Yep.
Has a very similar profile, both in terms of physical.
Like a good G League combine kind of thing.
And physical, both physically and skill wise.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar players. And what happened with him is he was on the Nuggets summer league team, played really well, got a preseason invite, stuck on the team for most of the preseason, then got cut and has been hanging out in the, what is it, Grand Rapids Gold, something.
Yeah,
right, ever since. Yeah. So I think that's what Hunter Couture's basically ceiling is. But I agree with your point. He's one of the best shooters in the ACC and in college basketball, period. Coming off screens, pulling up off the dribble, just regular catch and shoot. He can legitimately do it all at a very high clip. And that free throw percentage reflects it. He's been doing it for years. That's his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And he's made a living off of it so far. And I think that's what he's going to have to bank on as being his ticket into pro basketball.
I do think he's a guy that'd be like really valuable for a team on their G League team, as you have these other kind of developmental guys, like just having one knockdown shooter to kind of like even things out and play solid team basketball, I think is kind of a valuable dude to have. It's just whether is that enough for him, or does it make more sense to just kind of assume you're not going to make an NBA team and go overseas somewhere.
The G League is somehow a more wide open play of basketball than the NBA is.
Yeah. Which is, so says a lot. Yeah.
Having lots of shooters is definitely going to help your G League record go up.
Mm-hmm. Joe Swam's in the chat here. He thinks Funk is on a two-way deal with the Bulls right now. So
there are two Funks. There's Taylor Funk and then there's Andrew Funk.
Andrew Funk. There you go. Okay.
I think Taylor Funk might be on the Bulls.
Got it. That you guys are both better at this than me. My G League's acumen outside of the go-go here is a little bit lacking, to say the least. All right. Anybody else from any of the Power Five schools that we haven't mentioned yet that you think are worth kind of spending a couple minutes on?
Isaac McNeely for Virginia, very similar to Couture. I think, but somehow even better.
Okay.
Shooting, 47% from three last time I checked, and he's only a sophomore. So very much in the Couture ilk. Outside of that, I can't think of any on those four teams that are going to at least see an NBA floor in the recent future.
Yeah, I'm with you. In the chat, it never makes no sense. Asked about Malik Mack. Sorry, been a long day. Or Bob Carrington. We're mostly doing guys playing on teams here locally, not just guys locally that are playing well. But we could spend a minute on each. I think Malik Mack is a little small, unfortunately, at about 6'1", having a great year for Harvard as a freshman. But I think he's a guy that teams are going to want to see him prove it at a Power Five level before he can probably realistically come out. That would be my guess. Bub Carrington, kind of inefficient right now, seems to have his better games against sort of the lesser teams for the most part, but pretty impactful again as a freshman. He's got kind of that Baltimore guard vibe to him too. So two guys I really like to watch and root for, but I don't really know what their long-term futures in the NBA are. Bub specifically, I think, was on some like fringe lottery kind of territory in some of these mock drafts earlier in the year, and I don't think he's still kind of in that range for any NBA team, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, you're exactly right with Carrington. He was really good early in the year, but Pitt had, I think, the 298th best out of conference schedule or something like that.
Some stuff.
So he was playing great against Purdue Fort Wayne, but when he came to the ACC play, he's really started to slide. So I think if he can get a full year of ACC play under his belt, I think those skills should start to translate more next year. And I think he'll definitely be a guy to keep an eye on for the 25 draft.
Yeah, I think so too.
This year.
I would honestly keep an eye on both of them. If Malik Mack ends up at like a Maryland or something like that, I think that'd be big for his chances of going longer term. But again, not the biggest dude. So you've got to be extra good to kind of make up for some of that stuff. So the
thing is, do you want to transfer out of Harvard?
I mean, I've heard people say that Maryland is the Harvard of the College Park area, but that's about as close as I think he's
going. There you go. He wants to go for comp sci. He's going to the right place.
I did wonder about this too. So is it better to stay and just like light shit up at somewhere like a Harvard longer term, or prove it at the big, a bigger level? I think if you think you're a real NBA player, to me, I would go to a bigger school and prove it to some people. You know, there's going to be plenty of teams that want, his skill set. So I think that's probably more likely if he's like trying to get to the pros as fast as possible, would be my guess.
Also, side note, I just did some quick research. It turns out Andrew Funk is on the Bulls. So
Joe, killing it.
Joe, good for you. Keeping Joe, up with the T-League transactions more than me.
Yeah, and he's got Taylor Funk is on the go-go too. So that's my guy I'm going to for all the G League stuff here. So I'm glad somebody's keeping track here. So thank you, Joe. All right, let's move a little to the mid-majory level here. And probably my personal favorite of these prospects. I just love watching this guy play for some reason. And I can't totally tell you why, other than he's just good and fun to watch. And that's George Mason's Keyshawn Hall. He's a sophomore. This is a guy that was popular on like Instagram and things like that as a youth player, because he was just had, wing size, but guard skills, and he would dunk all over people. And eventually goes to the college level. And I want to say UNLV, I can't remember off the top of my head now, too many guys to think about here. Didn't have a good freshman year, lost a bunch of weight. I want to say we had him on this podcast earlier in the year here, so I would encourage anybody to go listen to that. I think he lost about 60 pounds. And has now turned himself into a real NBA prospect. He's 6'7". He's bouncy. He calls himself Big Guard Hall because he has actual guard skills. So averaging about 18 points, about 8.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. The stocks, not so great, half a steal, about a half a block, 2.5 turnovers, 35% from three on about 4.5 attempts, 85% from three free throw line. This is another guy that I think is a better shooter than that 3-point percentage indicates, because anytime he has actual space and his feet are set, I feel like the ball is going to go in the hoop. It's just they rely on him to be their offense a lot of times, and that's led to some kind of like no yes shots, and sometimes it doesn't quite work out for him. So that's my take on Hall. I would take him in the first round. That's probably aggressive. Nick, where are you at with Keyshawn Hall?
I agree that there's not the hype train behind him that there should be. Mm-hmm. He's exactly what pro teams are looking for.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? He just fits in today's NBA, I think.
In terms of really tall initiator, can distribute, can handle, can be a primary operator if you need him to be. Mm-hmm. I think the defense is part of what's holding him back, but I also think that there's just not that momentum behind him, and that's harder to get at the mid-major level. I think of a guy last year who was also kind of Instagram viral a bit. That was DeShondre Washington, played at New Mexico State before all that off-court stuff happened.
Yeah.
He was a very similar type of player, but just very good, very tall, very strong handle, could shoot the ball, but just didn't have that momentum behind him. And I think that's a very real thing, even in social media, where they're like, you know, if you're good, they'll find you.
Yep.
Well, Keyshawn Hall's good, and nobody really seems to have found him yet. So it may take another year, whether that's a George Mason or otherwise, for people to figure that out. But I would probably have him well within the second round. I don't know if I go first yet, just because I think the defense is still too weak.
Let's spend 1 second on the defense here too, because yeah. I agree overall, like he's just not, the effort isn't there to be good. And I wonder some of that is like situation, because if you watch like the Dayton game, he shot very poorly overall, but he got to the line a ton, which was nice offensively. But on defense, I think the versatility he provides you kind of makes up for, you know, some of the actual like issues, because in that game, he guarded both their point guard and Daron Holmes for decent stretches of that game. And Daron Holmes is probably another guy that's a fringe first round, you know, prospect and probably A-10 player of the year. So if you can guard both a point guard and a center in the same game, I think that goes a long way for teams. So just being like switchable and sturdy enough to hold up on bigger players, but quick enough to guard people on the perimeter. So I'm just saying, I think maybe this is a guy that if he gets into an NBA role, it's a little more 3-and-D-ish. Do we see him like, you know, lock in on defense a little bit more? That would be my guess, and I'd be willing to take a shot on that. It could be something that doesn't actually work out that way, though.
I think part of it is an effort issue. Part of it is, I think, I don't really like his lateral quickness.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to be able to guard NBA
guards. Yeah, for sure.
Even if, I don't know how shifty Dayton's point guard is, Javon Bennett. I think his name is. Yeah, but I don't think he's a Trae Young or anything like that.
For sure.
I think his switchability is a bit limited, a bit capped.
Okay.
And again, he's not that stock machine. He's not going to rack up deflections. He's not going to get in the passing lanes. He's not going to do any of that stuff. So as of right now, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. But
that's fine. Yeah, it's
all good. That doesn't mean that you're wrong or I'm right or anything like that. So.
Yeah, we'll see how it kind of bears out longer term. I think part of this, too, is like when we talked to him, it was interesting. I kind of asked, like, how did you lose all that weight? And he's like, well, I stopped eating like double Chipotle bowls, you know, before bed. And I run an extra mile a day now. Like, I think we're very early in like his fitness and strength building journey. So I'm wondering if this is a guy that, you know, they can kind of build up even more physically. And that helps things like the lateral quickness and stuff like that, too. So we'll just kind of see where he goes from here. A couple of just other names on the George Mason team. There's Darius Maddux that started out at Virginia Tech. He's averaging about 14 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 41% from three on good volume, 85% from the free throw line. Amari Kelly is a super senior for them. Actually, it's his sixth year of college basketball, which is tough, but 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.5-ish blocks a game, and 45% from three, although on pretty limited volume. I kind of really like Amari Kelly as a college player. I don't think he's an NBA player necessarily, but he is someone that's kind of interesting to me. He's got a little more touch. if he were like 2 or 3 years younger, I think I'd be kind of interested there. It's just tough when you're, you know, in your sixth year of college basketball before you're like really blossoming. And I just got to mention my guy, Woody Newton, local guy here too. So I want him to do well, but another switchable forward, runs the floor really well. Started out the year shooting the shit out of it, had a kind of big slump here in the middle, and is now like bounced back a little bit here too. So any of the other George Mason guys stand out for you on even being like two-way candidates longer term?
Probably the guy you mentioned last, Woody Newton. Mm-hmm. I think he has the most, he has the highest ceiling, but also the lowest floor.
Yeah.
Definitely the biggest swing prospect out of those three, but the guy that I would want to take a chance on the most, because I think he can defend really well. He's in that Syracuse system, where I think where you play in that zone, but I think you also learn how to disrupt passes a lot more and jump routes, that type of thing. And if his shooting clicks, I think you're talking about a positive impact player on both ends of the floor. Yep. The question is that shooting doesn't click very often.
Stuff, yeah.
So as it's kind of like a your classic sine wave will go three games where he's great and then five games where he's bad and two games where he's great. So if you can iron out that consistency, I think you might have something there.
I'm not like a firm believer in this kind of thing, but sometimes I do think it matters. Like if you watch them shoot around before games, like Woody just sits there and just drills like three after three after three, and it's like, okay, like how are you in the low 30s right now? So he's going to be interesting to follow. And I don't know, he's like a likable dude. So I just really want the best for somebody like Woody. And maybe this is another guy that, you know, sticking around the G League here for a little bit, he can kind of keep being a little bit of a late bloomer. Moving over to their A-10 rival here, George Washington. Just got kind of four names here, I think, that are in the mix. You tell me if any of them stand out to you. You've got freshman Darren Buchanan, kind of a 6'6"-ish power player, pretty athletic, can't really shoot it, but averaging 15 points and 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1.25 steals, 23% from three, 62% from the free throw line. Almost the polar opposite of him in Garrett Johnson, a 6'8", also freshman shooter, but he lost 2 years due to some health issues. Again, go back and check out that pod, shameless plug. 13.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 40% from three. Like I think Garrett is like a real, real, real big time shooter with some size, but given some of the 87% from the free throw line, I think backs that up too. But given some of the, just the mobility issues he's had with the hip, I think that holds him back defensively. Either of those freshmen sort of stand out to you, Nick, as guys who could make an NBA roster at some point here.
Yeah. So GW is a team I actually got to see in person earlier this year when they played Davidson. Mm-hmm. And Garrett actually came away as the guy who I was most impressed with just because of the difficulty and variance of the threes that he was hitting in that game. They're just
he's a real shooter.
Ridiculous. There was one where he caught it in the corner, was fading out of bounds and drilled it. Again, as you mentioned, very high level shooter. If I was a high major team, I'd be looking at him in the portal as a guy that I could snatch up and
Kevin Willard, go down the street, baby. We need the shooters.
Darren Buchanan is more of like a brute on the inside, I would say. Gobbles up a lot of rebounds, a lot of putbacks in the paint, but it's almost, as you mentioned, the polar opposite of Garrett. He cannot shoot.
Yeah.
That game against Davidson, I think he missed 6 or 7 free throws in a row. Mm-hmm. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal to watch. So I don't think he's at a level yet where I would even be considering him if I was a high major team to grab him up. Mm-hmm. But again, very productive for GW and very good at what his role is as like a big bully ball guy on the inside.
I need him to be a little better defensively too. Like a Garrett, I can kind of understand, you know, some of the stuff there. He's coming back after 2 years off. It's going to take him some time. And I think he's had some hip stiffness and things like that, that have kind of held him back a little bit here and flexibility wise. But if you're Darren Buchanan and you're that good defensively, like GW was awful defensively. And I think he's one of the better defenders, but that's sort of a low bar. Like you need him to come back next year and be just lights out on both ends of the ball. And he has to shoot at least somewhat to just even appeal to anybody. Like I said, even at the power five level, I think.
Yeah. I don't think he has that much of a mid-range game either. I think his main bread and butter is backing people down, gobbling up rebounds and second chance points. which is a very valuable skill in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But when you're, what is he, 6'8", 6'9"?
I don't even think he's that big. I think he's probably more in the 6'6", 6'7" kind of range.
And I was about to say, as you project, if you project as like a 3 or 4, that's just not really going to get it done unless you're a Draymond Green and you're an elite processor of the game on both ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guy I just really like, and he's fun to watch, and like maybe one of my favorite college players to watch the last like 2.5 years here is James Bishop IV. He's a super senior for GW, absolute bucket, 17 points a game, 3 rebounds, 4.5 assists. Unfortunately, like 3 turnovers, but he's only 35% from three this year, but on a lot of volume. Like, I think he is a real deal shooter too. He's another dude that takes a ton of tough shots. And when you just watch them warm up before games, like every ball goes in the hoop from wherever he takes it from. He's also an 84% free throw shooter. And this is probably the worst shooting year he's had at GW. So I think there's enough sample size there to know he really shoots it. Also, just given kind of the way they play and the role they ask of him, there's just almost no defense at this point, and that's really going to hold you back. But he's a guy like I wouldn't totally rule out just like absolutely microwaving people in the G League or something like that and getting a couple of call-ups here throughout. Am I crazy here, I guess? Do you see any shot for James Bishop hanging around in NBA teams?
Not really, because we've seen that happen before where undersized volume shooters who can really stroke it from deep have gotten call-ups from NBA teams. Like, I look at a guy like Chris Clemens.
Yeah.
He's a lightning scorer, I think, for Campbell, I think is where he went to college.
Yep. Yeah, he's like one of the top 5 all-time leading scorers in college basketball, too. Yep. Like, he's legit. Yep.
But was an elite shooter, really high volume. And actually got a call up with the Rockets, and I think spent a couple of seasons, one or two seasons,
parts of seasons, exactly.
Yeah, hanging around the fringes of the NBA. So I think that's James Bishop's ceiling. He's another guy who I don't think he's 6 foot tall.
I'm exactly 6 feet tall, and I think James and I are probably about the same height, just kind of being in the room with him. So I think that's. If he measured 6'1 with shoes, it wouldn't be shocking to me, but he's not going to come out like 6'3 or 6'4 or something like that, I don't think.
But yeah, the game I went to against Davidson, he was pulling from the logo.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And there were shots that people in the stands were like, no, why are you shooting that? And then
if they go in, you're like, oh.
It was like unbelievable. So again, like you said, very fun player to watch. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be a 10-year vet in the NBA. Or anything, but he's the player who I could see out of the four having the highest likelihood of seeing the court next year or the year after that.
There was a guy for them last year when I would watch that team that was a freshman, Max Edwards, that I thought like, oh, okay, this is a guy that has some NBA future here. I even mentioned him to some guys that were, you know, looking at kind of fringe players to pay attention to. And the box score stuff is kind of deceptive. So Max is averaging about 12.5 points. Like a little over 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1 steal, 36% from three on 5 attempts per game, and about 89% from the free throw line. Another dude that really looks like he can shoot it, but I just really question the feel. And he's like sturdily built, like 6'4"-ish kind of guy, good athlete, but just like does some dumb shit and takes some bad shots and doesn't defend as well as he probably should. Like there's tools there. It's just... kind of seems like he didn't take a big jump from freshman to sophomore. So I don't think he's going to be on anybody's radars right now either, unfortunately.
Out of the four, he's definitely the best athlete, unquestionably, in my opinion. The last shot of the regulation, the game went to overtime against Davidson that I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And they drew up a play for him where he would come around the curl and basically get a wide open shot at the rim to take it. And he got it, and he got above the rim and then absolutely blew the layup. And that's a good microcosm of the Max Edwards experience. Like, he gives you all the physical tools, so get in the right position, but just make some boneheaded mistakes, like you said. And I think that's going to hold him back for now.
Mm-hmm.
I think when Bishop leaves, he'll have a more responsibility on his shoulders. And I think with that, the feel will hopefully come along. But as of right now, he's basically just a pure athlete, and that's about it.
He's the guy that when you talk to fans of the team, they all just sort of like cringe when they talk about him too. And I think that's kind of indicative of what that's been like for them this year. Let's start to kind of the mid-major darling maybe of the first half of the college basketball season. And that was James Madison. Terrence Edwards having a great year for them. They started out red hot. I think they won their first 21 games. He's averaging 17 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 37% from 3 on 3.5 attempts, 82% free throw shooter. I buy the shooting. I buy the defense. I buy the playmaking. Like, I actually think Terrence Edwards has like a puncher's chance of being a guy that like ends up on the Miami Heat, you know, as like a 10th man for a couple of years. What do you think of Terrence Edwards?
Yeah, to your point, perfect. I know the word 3 and D gets thrown around a lot, but that's literally his calling card, or threes and defense.
Yeah,
exactly. Like I was looking up his stats the other day, and before I watched my first James Madison game with Marshall, he's shooting 45% at the rim, which is very poor.
It's not ideal.
So as long as you can keep him outside the arc, he'll be fine. We were chatting about him actually in our private chat in preparation for this meeting. And for the first like 5 to 10 minutes of watching him play, I had no idea what his dominant hand was because I think he's right-handed, but I think he loves dribbling with his left hand and finishing with his left hand.
He throws some live dribble, like bounce passes, left hand, where you're just like, what the shit? Like, there was one where he wraps around a guy and spins this directly into a guy's hands for a layup. And you're like, how did this guy pull that off? And to your point, like, yeah, I had to go back and double check that he was actually right-handed.
Yeah. So that's why I buy the playmaking. I think he can be a secondary playmaker. I think if he can add some more consistent finishing moves, then he has a real shot of being like an undrafted gem type player.
He's probably about a legit 6'4", 6'5" kind of ballpark. Like, that looks like an accurate height to me.
Yeah, I think if he can become more of an off-ball scorer as well, because he's not going to be asked to do as much creation, I think that will help expand his game as well, because we know he can do some of the on-ball stuff. So I think the two keys for me are becoming a better finisher, because if they run you off the line, you're going to have to be able to do something. And working more off screens and taking a higher volume of threes in that sort of ilk, as opposed to just like stand up, dribble, or stationary catch and shoot, which is what a lot of college players do. And then they come to the NBA and realize that
you don't get those ever.
Them are where you're full sprint off curls, trying to catch and move. And so we saw it with like a guy like Aaron Nesmith, where his three-pointer like completely fell off for the first couple of years because he had to get used to that. So I think that's going to be an issue for him too when he takes the step up. But in, like you said, I think he's got the foundation there to be a solid role player.
It's just one of those guys where you just watch him do like enough stuff, and not to be like corny, but he does like winning things for them, and he drives a lot of what they do. So I think he's he's a guy that if I heard the Wizards were bringing him in for a workout, I wouldn't write it off as like, oh, they're bringing in kind of a local guy. Like, I would buy that this is a guy they think can, you know, impact the team longer term. So his teammate TJ Bickerstaff is probably the next best guy to talk about in this realm. And I don't see NBA player there personally. Senior, averaging 14 points, about 8 rebounds, less than a half a block a game, which is weird for a dude that big. Absolutely does not shoot it. So I just don't think there's much long-term future there. But he's related to a bunch of NBA people, so maybe he gets a longer look than a lot of other guys would.
Mid-major Julian Reese, I think.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
For him, he doesn't take as many left-handed hook shots. I think he has a better arsenal than that. But in terms of overall offensive game, very similar. He wouldn't really be on most radars if he wasn't JB Bickerstaff's nephew. So I think he gets a shot on the Cavs summer league team, and we'll see where it goes from there. But yeah, I agree with you. Nowhere near Edwards' potential as an NBA player. Very fun college one, though.
Yeah, for sure. And then they're a fun team to watch, too. They'll hang 100 points on somebody and not really even have to work that hard to do it. So, all right, let's rapid fire through the rest of these guys here. We'll just give a quick sentence or two on each of them, and then we'll just see if there's anyone of the group you want to spend a little more time on. I'll start with VCU's Max Schulga, 6'4", shooter, guard, you know, scorer type. What do you think of Schulga's game?
Great shooter. Doesn't create a lot of separation, so I don't really see much of his future on ball as a pro player. We'll have to work more on the off-ball stuff as well.
Yep.
But the shooting fundamentals are there, and I think that's what his calling card is going to be.
He's 41% from three, about 87% from the free throw line. Played at Utah State under Ryan Odom. He's now at VCU under Ryan Odom. I think he'll know offense and gets by enough defensively. So interesting player there. Jordan King from Richmond, just kind of undersized, super senior bucket getter. But I watched him hang 32 on somebody earlier in the year, and he was just hitting from fucking all over the place. And it was like, okay, I'm watching like little Steph Curry. It was kind of hard to reconcile. But any shot of Jordan King hanging around the NBA at any point?
There was a player coming out of Liberty a few years ago, Darius McGee.
Yep.
That's who Jordan King reminds me of.
Yep.
And I don't think Darius McGee ended up getting NBA minutes, but he did hang around the summer league. And I think
he was on a two-way, I think, for a little bit with somebody. So,
yeah. So I think Jordan King definitely could, especially when we talked about like a James Bishop earlier, mm-hmm. where little volume scorers have chances to hang around the fringes as long as they can keep scoring in efficient clips. So
slightly bigger than that, but also slightly maybe undersized volume scorer here. UMBC's Deion Brown, 6'3", averaging about 19 points a game, 7 rebounds, which is great for a guy that size, 2.5 assists, unfortunately about 3.5 turnovers, but he's 37% from three, 77% from the free throw line. I just kind of like watching this guy play. I have no idea if he has any NBA future whatsoever, but he's a fun college player to watch. And they're really bad.
I haven't watched a full UMBC game yet. I don't know if that's because I still have PTSD from 2018.
I don't blame you. And you're not missing anything this year. I think they're like 6-20 or something like that.
But from what I can tell, I think he's a great creator for a guy of his size for sure. And when you can create both your own shot and shot for others, I think you have a good chance. I think he does need to step up a level from UMBC in order to get himself firmly on draft radars, but I think he should be interesting for high major teams to look at.
Yeah, as a sophomore, there's still some room to grow there. Another one, neighborhood here, Christian May from Towson, also a sophomore, about 6'5", for any of the DMV high school fans. He went to Bishop O'Connell. He's averaging 12 points, 4 rebounds, about 1 assist, 37% from 3 on pretty good volume, only a 62% free throw shooter. I don't know. I watched a video on him getting an NIL deal for Bagel World up in Hunt Valley. It was interesting to see, but I don't think there's much NBA future so far, but another guy that maybe if he scaled up a level, he could show some things.
Yeah. I have to try Bagel World now. I've never been to that place. Yeah.
I may have blown that one up. So Bagel something, but more power to him for getting some NIL love out of the deal.
I don't want to say too much because I haven't watched a full Towson game yet. So
other one here, we got Chauncey Jenkins of ODU, senior, 6'4", 16 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, about 3 assists, a 1 steal, 33% from 3, 74% from the free throw line. Freakishly athletic. He's like his whole highlight reel is just going to be poster. But do you think Jenkins kind of has any NBA future?
Athletes like that will always get chances.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be extended looks in the summer league or in the G League. They actually had a freshman, Vachon Ouellette, I think, at the beginning of the year, who was lighting it up, and then he got kicked off the team. I think he was actually their best prospect.
Sure.
That's not going to be the case anymore. But Chauncey Jenkins will definitely hang around the fringes for a while. I think so. He should be
a really good G League player, I think.
He should be a look for the go-go. Definitely.
Yeah, that'd be
definitely cool. Because when you have those athletic gifts and that scoring potential, I think that's a good foundation for a solid G League player.
Yeah. Just let's spend a minute on the Howard guys, because there's just a couple of guys here that are really interesting to me and they're a fun team to watch. I don't think any of them are going to do a whole lot at the NBA level, but they're worth keeping an eye on. For Maryland fans, you might remember Marcus Dockery. He didn't really latch on long-term Maryland, but he's having a great junior year for Howard so far this year, shooting it pretty well. Bryce Howard is sort of this like undersized bully ball. Like, could he be Terry Taylor that played for the Pacers 2.0 kind of guy? I've got Shaheem Odom. If anybody watched Sierra Canyon and the Brownie teams, like he played on those teams back in the day. Like this 6'6" powerfully built, like point forward almost. I thought this was a dude that would blow up this year, but he's averaging about 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists as a sophomore, and just really is not shooting the ball well at all. Unfortunately, that's going to be the first thing he has to fix to have a chance. And then maybe the like polar opposite of him, their teammate Seth Towns, who is a super, 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 super senior. I think this is, he started his college basketball career 8 years ago, for anybody that remembers him at Ohio State or Harvard. Blew his knees out, took some time off, plays in a giant knee brace, but he's about 6'8", 6'9". He shoots the absolute shit out of it. And it's really cool to see him play like the Kevin Durant role, you know, with some of the shots he takes for Howard sometimes. Any of those guys stand out to you at all?
If he wasn't 28 years, 26, 27 years 26, old, I think Towns would be the top prospect for me again, because his game is so silky smooth.
Yep.
But I think the story in itself is awesome that he's able to fight back from that and become such an efficient player.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the other three, though, Dockery is your classic catch and shoot guy. Just hangs out in the corner, buries threes. Doesn't really do much beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bryce Harris is a great downhill scorer. I don't know how well that would translate to a pro style game.
Not much, I don't think. Yeah.
I think he's been playing really well for Howard.
He's consistently like, you know, conference player of the week or defensive player of the week sometimes too. And he's a fun watch for anyone.
And I watched the Howard game, and every time he just goes 90 miles an hour, he just
bulldozes you.
He'll just go in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or draw a foul every single time. And I think that's why his scoring numbers are so good. But I think after watching Howard, I agree with you. Shai Odom is the highest upside player. I think we were chatting before, and you're like, oh, you watched him as freshman. You're like, oh, this might be Bruce Brown.
Exactly.
Very similar style game. Like the definition of a secondary creator is Shai Odom, but the production just hasn't been there this year.
He's dealt with some injuries and stuff too that's maybe held him back, but he's a guy that needs to blow up next year, I think, to even get like back on radars for people.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Mount St. Mary's, got to give them a little love. I love their team. Dakota LaFue, well, we talked about this, kind of the undersized scoring guard who can just light people up. He's probably about 6'3". As a senior, he's averaging 18 points, 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.5 steals, about 3 turnovers. 34% from three on about 7 attempts per game, 77% from the free throw line. I think he is a better shooter than that percentage, but he like basically is there like Allen Iverson, you know, for Mount St. Mary's. Like they just surround him with defenders and make him kind of do all the offensive stuff. He's a guy I think that could get, you know, some G League minutes and then have some production there. And just let's close out with the American guys. My boy Matt Rogers is having an amazing year for American. He's probably one of the two best players in the Patriot League, I think. 16 points, 6 rebounds a game, 1.5 assists, about 1 steal, about 2/3 of a block, 37% from three, 73% from the free throw line. The shooting I really buy for a guy that's about 6'9". Not really much of a rim protector or super switchable. No shade to my boy, Matt. I think he could have like a crazy good productive overseas career and also do some things at the G League level, but probably not an NBA player here.
Shout out to them. They just beat Colgate, who was top of the Patriot League. So
yeah,
they're really storming towards a possible March Madness berth.
Yeah, they're one of the three best Patriot League teams. They've struggled against some of the weaker teams in the league. I want to say they just lost to Navy earlier today, unfortunately, which is not ideal, but they've had some like real injury stuff here too. So I think if they can get healthy in the tournament, they could beat any in that league probably. The one guy on their team I would just say maybe keep an eye on longer term. He's definitely years away from this probably at this point, but is Matt Mayock, 6'8" freshman, averaging about 9 points a game, 2.5 rebounds, 42% from three right now, about 77% from the free throw line. I think just like in a couple of years, he's a guy that if he was on a radar, like it wouldn't shock me. And they had a guy transfer out of there last year, a similar archetype, and Johnny O'Neill. He's playing really well for Santa Clara, another 6'9" guy who's a stretchy shooter kind of dude. So someone to keep an eye on. Nick, anyone else here to close us out? I think we've been pretty thorough for covering the entire tri-state area here, it seems like.
Very brief shout out to Toby LaWall of ECU. Yeah. Very similar to Ryan Dunn in that he's a very good defender and a very poor offensive player, but stood out on the VCU tape that I watched, as he was rated for me as their best prospect just because of that absurd length and how well he uses it. Not quite as good as Dunn, but still an interesting player to keep tabs on.
I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Nick. If there were any of these guys we talked about here that aren't currently projected to be drafted players, if you had to kind of hang your hat on just one of them at the very least, like here's a guy that I think, you know, I'm putting my reputation on is a guy that could kind of break out a little bit. Is there anyone here that that you feel strongly enough about to kind of?
My reputation? I don't know.
You know, not your whole reputation, but like, you know.
Probably Keyshawn Hall, just because of his skill combination and how valuable that is to current NBA teams. I think if he shows more consistency on that defensive end, I think he could be very easily jump into draftable range, even maybe into the first round, like even
fringe first round kind of. I'm with you. That's the dude for me too. Just as a sophomore, there's room to grow there too. And I think the best is yet to come for someone like that. I had to throw out maybe one more name here. Yeah, if Garrett Johnson hung around as just like a knockdown, come in and be a Duncan Robinson type shooter for some team, like it wouldn't totally shock me either, especially as he gets healthier and stronger and things like that too. So shout out to him. He's just such a great story. I want something like that for a guy like that. Nick, last question. Where can people find all of the good NBA content you create and draft content specifically you're putting out here?
So most of my stuff is on Twitter. At Cali Drafts, K-A-L-I Drafts. And then I have a pinned tweet, which is linked to all of my analytics stuff. So I am a data scientist in my other life. And so I do a lot of my analytics projects on basketball. And so I have a lot of links to cool stuff that you could play around with in there.
And you're going to have to explain this better than I have, but you have a system you have built here, I guess an algorithm of some sort that will tell players, you know, tell you how draftable a player is or isn't basically. Can you explain that just a little bit for folks?
I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. Basically, I took a stats database of every college player going back to 2009, along with their biometric information like height, weight, and wingspan, wherever I have it. And their recruiting information, and basically ran a model on it and said, give me an output for how likely a player is on a scale from 0 to 100 on getting drafted into the NBA based off of the historical college data. Okay. And so every couple weeks, I'll put out an update for the top 100 players that the algorithm thinks will get drafted. And usually it has about a 70% hit rate at predicting people out of those who stay in the draft. So that's my main calling card in the analytics world.
No, it's been really fun to pay attention to just because it's a nice like fact check for me. Like, all right, am I way out of line with liking this guy here? Is there anything to support this data wise? So it's cool to just kind of see the comparison between two things there. So if you're not following Nick again, his Twitter handle will be in the episode description here. Make sure you're doing it because this kind of stuff. Nobody I know goes this deep on as many guys as Nick does. So I appreciate that. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for rescheduling with me once or twice here. I appreciate the flexibility.
Of course. I was excited about this.
Well, we'll have to do one of these here again. We'll do a little more wizard specific themed one here closer to the draft time too.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. This was awesome. You love listening to your stuff. You're awesome at what you do. And thank you for thank you for giving me the platform. Been a long day to talk about this stuff and being so enthusiastic to have me on. It's awesome.
No, I love it. Yeah, appreciate you, man. You're a nice dude, but I wouldn't ask you if you weren't really good at this. So thank you very much. So no, of course I would. But anyway, thanks, man. That's appreciated. And we'll definitely do one of these again here in a little bit. Hopefully after the tournament or something, there's more to talk about and see what our stance on some of these guys has changed even as we get closer to the draft time. Everybody, you know the drill, hit that little like button for us, hit subscribe if you're not already subscribed, and if you want to leave us an iTunes review, we always love that kind of stuff. We're presented by betonline.ag, and we will catch y'all next time.